Hi, I'm Matt Miller. If you like Left, Right, and Center, I'm excited to let you know I'm hosting a new bi-weekly podcast that will be distributed as part of your subscription to Left, Right, and Center. It's called This Is Interesting, and it'll bring you a deeper encounter with the people and ideas that are shaping our world. I hope you'll give it a listen and let me know what you think by emailing me at matt@mattmilleronline.com, tweeting me at @MattMillerNow, or sharing your thoughts at kcrw.com/thisisinteresting. Thanks. And now, here's Left, Right, and Center.
From KCRW and kcrw.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call it.
The latest from Boston. The gun bills go down, plus that Rogoff Reinhardt fiasco. Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller, your moderator, holding down the political center. Robert Scheer is on the left. Special guest Ramesh Panuru on the right. He's a senior writer for National Review, a columnist for Bloomberg View, a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and I'm told also supreme ruler of the universe in some quarters. Welcome to you, Ramesh. It's great to have you joining the conversation.
Glad to visit any of my subjects.
And also joining us with her unique perspective, Chrystia Freeland, the digital editor at Thomson Reuters. Welcome all. Obviously, as we go to air, which people should be aware is midday around noon on Friday, this very moving story, but lots of incredible developments in the Boston bombing case. Robert Scheer, why don't I kick you off? You know, based on what we've learned before we went to air on this hour, what do you make of what we know?
Well, I think one thing to say right off the bat is one should not try to make too much, not only of something that is unfolding, but also it's so easy to draw these broad sweeping conclusions. I mean, what you have, as far as we know, are two unhinged people. The reasons for their being unhinged have been described by some who knew them well and some who are speculating. But I think early speculation that they might have been part of a movement, or this was caused by a movement, or was some kind of systemic act of terror plotted elsewhere and so forth, doesn't seem to fit the bill. And so I think one thing is that we could say is the media, particularly that round-the-clock cable coverage and everything, was obscene in its attempt to milk this for you know, just for ratings, I guess. And I think we should be cautious. I think the reality is that there are a lot of unhinged people in the world. There are a lot of trouble spots in the world. There are a lot of people react to those situations. And very bad things happen.
Ramesh, I mean, the one thing I toss in is that, I mean, at least, you know, as I was watching the coverage this morning, we do know that the older brother who is dead had spent, it looks like, 6 or 7 months outside the country back in Russia. And at least according to Richard Engel on NBC, the, you know, authorities were looking into what his activities were there. What do you make of what we know? What are your first impressions and reactions?
Well, I think my first thought is that what Robert said makes a lot of sense, that we need to avoid making sweeping conclusions until we know more. And I think we are going to know a lot more. You know, we know things about the part of the world that they're from, but that doesn't mean that we know what the motives were. And the responsible thing to do at this point is to hold off.
Chrystia, your thoughts?
I'm going to join the responsibility chorus. Very strongly, actually, and say I agree really strongly with Bob and Ramesh. We really don't know. We don't know if this has any connection with Chechnya, or whether it's just, you know, two really, you know, troubled, crazed young men who happen to be from there. And I think it is really, really important to hold back. I will say, you know, Bob mentioned for a minute the media, and this whole week has really been a demonstration to me, somewhat sort of shameful since I'm part of the media tribe. But I think, you know, people at large are much more sane and sensible than the media at the moment. And it has felt to me, you know, as if, you know, the voice in the media are really trying to stir things up and gin things up. And it seems as if Americans are really, you know, being pretty calm, being pretty collected, not yet assuming anything. And, you know, I think that says something really great about the character of the people in Boston and around the country.
And yet, Bob, I mean, just a couple thoughts to toss in the mix. I mean, I understand the kind of outrage at the media and some things that were said incorrectly, too early by various people. And yet, at the same time, there is something about the news gathering function. Once information starts to get out, at least Friday midday, you could see so many tentacles being, you know, from the kind of octopus-like, or, you know, to mix several metaphors. Once there's some information, the thirst to try and develop more information, and I guess fueled by some competitive spirit, but also I think a kind of civic-minded information sharing and gathering spirit, that does mean that because we have a, you know, a sector of of the you know, the American press, in the best sense, will be trying to put flesh on everything we know. And I understand the excesses. I understand errors of judgment that may be made by some, but I wouldn't paint the whole media with a bad brush, because it is the source of how we get so. We're going to learn so much so quickly, in part because of all the kind of instinctive juices to do that. Bob, am I wrong?
Yeah, but a little education wouldn't hurt. And you know, suddenly they have to switch gears. Where is this Chechnya? What is that all about? And
I've been to Chechnya many times. I can tell you guys about it.
In a second, you will.
Well, why don't you
You're a media outlier.
My point being that it doesn't fit a convenient narrative. You know, the rebellion in Chechnya was, after all, against the Russians and Putin, who we now think is a bad guy. And you know, the whole complexity of that situation, if it has anything to do with this. I just want to pick up on two points if we're going to have some controversy. One is the president's remark about defining terrorism, where he said any time a bomb is used against civilians, that's terrorism. I agree with that sentiment. Anytime you target civilians with a bomb, that is terrorism. I just wonder whether he's prepared to live by that standard. And we have these drone attacks that seem quite often to target civilians. Now, of course, the argument will be that they're collateral. We know that. I was just looked up the history of these bombs that were made with the pressure cooker. They involve pellets, ball bearings, junk. Well, they're very reminiscent of the guava and pineapple bombs that we dropped over Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. And they were anti-personnel weapons. I looked up a report from the American Friends Service Committee. They still go off. And 580,000 bombing missions, one every 8 minutes, 24 hours a day over Laos. 90 million bomblets were dropped. And people still tilling the field pick up these things and they explode. And these things were not against military targets. These were, you know, designed to basically demoralize our people. So I think demoralize those people. And I think that, you know, that raises some real questions here. Obviously, what happened in Boston is horrible. But then why isn't it horrible when it's visited on other people? And we should really question, what are the standards and how do we judge terrorism?
Boy, a couple of thoughts. Ramesh, I want to get you in on that. But in some way, I'm surprised, Bob, that you're using the occasion of Boston to kind of revisit things in the U.S. I heard you. But the other thing, Ramesh, I thought was interesting on Friday, contrary to what the point Bob makes, is Charles Krauthammer had a column in the Post arguing that the president was wrong to dub this terrorism until we know it had a political motive, which we don't know at this hour. And absent that, you know, bombs are crimes of terrible violence, but not terrorism unless there's a political motivation that is behind it. I don't know where you are on this, or take it where you will.
Mm. Well, I mean, I think that is the usage of the word terrorism that I'm most familiar with, that I tend to sort of lapse into myself. I guess the question would be, what are the sort of implications of the label in each case? Since I think the pure question of what the label is just doesn't matter quite as much. And if the question is, do you treat it as a crime, or do you treat it as something more than that, or some sort of like an act of war, or some kind of illegal act of war? I mean, I think at that point you do need to know sort of who's involved, what kind of threat is being posed in terms of other attacks, and to some degree you need to know what the motives were.
Go ahead. I am
more clearly, in fact, completely clearly with Krauthammer on this one. I think the president was wrong to describe it as an act of terror without knowing more. And I think he was wrong because I do think there is a very clear difference, and the word terror helps us to draw that line between individuals doing really bad things just because they are bad individuals acting, you know, alone or with a brother, and between, you know, organized efforts with a goal to harm civilians to achieve that goal. So, yeah, I think there is a clear distinction. We don't know yet whether which side of that very important line the horrible attacks in Boston fall on.
Say a little more, Christia, since you're the I think the one among us who's spent time in Chechnya, and you were posted in Russia, right? For the Financial
Times.
Yes, time
I lived in Russia and Ukraine. I've been to Chechnya. I've been to Dagestan. I've been to Makhachkala.
And so, what is all of
these places?
So when you hear that this is where the brothers came from, what does that make you think? Obviously, not being premature in assessing motives, etc. But give a little context for our listeners.
Well, look, the war between Russia and the Caucasus, and particularly between Russia and Chechnya, has been going on for a very long time. The Chechens were fighting Russians and Russian occupiers in the Tsarist period. You know, some of the great Russian literature is actually written about this and about how impossible it was to subdue the Chechens. The Chechens were singled out for particular oppression in the Stalinist era, and you had to have pretty terrible things happen to you as a people if you're particularly singled out by Stalin. So they suffered very, very much. And as the sort of, you know, authoritarian lid came off very early in the late 80s and early 90s, they mounted a sort of an armed insurrection against Russia. Initially, they sort of peacefully asked for independence. This is when the Soviet Union was falling apart. And that's where the Russian Federation drew the line, that it was okay for the separately constituted Soviet Socialist republics. Those were allowed to become independent. But the territories that were part of the Russian Federation proper, even those like Chechnya that were very ethnically distinct, and Chechnya has a majority ethnic Chechen population, and this history of oppression, the Russians, first Boris Yeltsin and then Vladimir Putin, said, you know, no, we can't let these territories go. If we do, this could dangerously trigger a wholesale dissolution of the Russian Federation. And the war to keep Chechnya was incredibly brutal. There was actually, I was in Grozny both before the real flattening of Grozny, the Chechen capital, and afterwards and throughout. Significantly more bombs were dropped on Grozny than on Sarajevo. It was really a flattened, devastated place, really, really brutal fighting. And in some ways, the aftermath was even worse because the way that, you know, Yeltsin, brutal fighting under Yeltsin, brutal fighting under Putin, and the way that Chechnya has ultimately been subdued is basically by putting one gang of Chechen gangsters in charge of everybody else and really allowing them, you know, almost unlimited rights to really cruelly abuse their people. Some of the Russian journalists who we worry about when we hear Russian journalists disappearing and being murdered, it's often because they are uncovering some of the horrible things happening in Chechnya.
Let us hold that thought. Let us know what you think about the emerging developments in Boston at kcrw.com/LRC. Up ahead, more on the events in Boston, plus the gun debate and the economics of austerity. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
Make a donation of just a dollar a day, and you can join one of our exciting and exclusive Angel Clubs. Choose from music, books, DVDs, or cookbooks delivered right to your front door. Learn more and join now at kcrw.com/join.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller, The Washington Post. Robert Scheer of TruthDig.com. Special guest on the conservative side is Ramesh Panuru of National Review and Bloomberg View and the American Enterprise Institute, and Christian Freeland of Thomson Reuters Digital. Ramesh, I felt like I cut you off a little bit mid-sentence inadvertently last time. So pick up the thread where you will.
Sure.
On Boston.
Sure. A slightly different angle on it. I have heard some people making the case, anytime there's some sort of outrage like this, people will say, if such and such happens, or if we do this, then the terrorists will have won. And one thing that I'm hearing a lot of is people have shown that if they do something terrible, they can shut down an entire city, and therefore they've won. Or is this the right message that we want to send? And I don't agree with that line of criticism, but I'm curious what other people think.
Robert, pick it up there or wherever.
Yeah, I want to pick up. I think it's a very dangerous distinction to say that if a state targets civilians, that's not terror. Because, I mean, terrorism, I mean, is something awful, something that should be banned, something you should condemn. Yes, it has an inherently pejorative tone to it. That's how we use the word. It's evil. Because you're targeting, as the president said, anytime, I'm quoting directly, anytime bombs are used to target innocent civilians, it is an act of terror. Yes, it is, my own words, despicable. And so, for example, the government in Syria now, if they kill civilians, they'll call it collateral damage. They'll say it was state policy. That's not terror. But if the rebels against that government make the same errors and civilians die, well, then that's terrorism. We can't accept that. Targeting civilians is the operative point here. Dropping the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki during the day when you maximize civilian casualties, often children going to school, that was terrorism. In the movie Fog of War, showing the systematic bombing of Japan, cities, that was terrorism. And we should call it for what it is. And we lose our moral authority to condemn it as it should be condemned in every instance when we exonerate our own government for engaging in such practices.
All right. Bob, I always feel like I understand the passion. I always feel like you're playing to type for those who want to say that on a week like this, you're blaming America first.
Matt, let me just tell you, I was in a village in Vietnam where those pineapple and guava bombs were dropped, and I saw the kids that were maimed.
I got it.
And I visited the graves. So I have been in these war zones. I know what fragmentation bombs, anti-personnel bombs do, and I know they were dropped from American planes.
Go ahead.
Sure. Well, I do think that we should be much more concerned than most people are, left, right, or center, about the deliberate targeting of civilians, and also about the acceptance of civilian casualties overseas. That one of the things that I found problematic about the drone debate is the extent to which people have not focused on that question, and instead have focused on, I think, more peripheral questions about the possibility of drone targets on civilians inside the United States. So I'll go with him on that point.
Fair enough. Christian, one thing I wanted to bring up before we, obviously this is going to be talked about.
You don't want to give me a chance to say it's bad to kill innocent civilians?
I do, and we're going to stipulate that. One of the things that's amazing to me about what's happened this week is the extent to which social media and stuff and the fact that there's now video and iPhones everywhere seem to really accelerate the ability to find what looks like at this hour, who was behind this? Any thoughts on that? I mean, it was people tweeting that I knew somebody, and the police show up the next morning, and the ability to triangulate very quickly, that kind of stirring picture that I've seen on all the networks from somebody's iPhone with the younger brother, I think, on camera very clearly, all kind of stunning and not possible, say, 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, Matt, I do think that was very striking. And I think that it was sort of, you know, the social media forces that we in the media have seen all of a sudden seemed to hit police investigations. And we saw sort of techniques and behaviors that, you know, we've used before in you know, maybe everybody together watching some celebrity event on TV and all tweeting about it and getting, you know, Justin Bieber trending on Twitter or whatever it is. And suddenly we saw all of that community attention focused. And yeah, I was really surprised at how quickly that all happened. And I thought it was also interesting that, you know, the decision was made to release the photograph clearly based on an understanding that the world had moved there.
Ramesh, before we leave this, and there is a little other news this week that we do want to cover, one thing I was struck by was just this kind of sense of post 9/11 vulnerability and awareness, at least in me and folks I talked to this week, that we haven't had in some time. I mean, in some ways, we've been very lucky as a country, also thanks to a lot of dedicated efforts of folks to keep us safe. But we've been lucky that there haven't been more things like this since 9/11, haven't we?
You know, I think that is one of those big facts about the last 12 years that sort of needs an explanation. And it may be the happy explanation that there actually aren't as many people in this country who are willing to give up their lives for insane causes, be they ideological ones or personal ones.
Bob, but anyway, let us know, folks, what you think about all this stuff related to Boston this week, any angle of it on our blog at kcrw.com/LRC. Other big news this week, Bob, obviously the gun reforms going down, lots of outrage among Democrats among that, the president making a strong statement. What did you make of it? What's the significance of all this?
Well, the inability of people in Congress to do the right thing when it's obvious. Obviously, you can't even agree on background checks, which 90% of the American public say they understand and want. You can't have a minimum amount of regulation of the purchase of assault weapons. And what I think is an interesting contradiction for some of the conservatives. I mean, I respect the Constitution, and I don't like throwing away an amendment. But it's so clear that what's involved in the Second Amendment is this notion of a countervailing state public power against the federal government. One can defend that. It's a denial of a certain kind of federal power. But it has nothing to do with individuals being able to have assault weapons. It has a great deal to do with the citizen army. It has a great deal to do with not having a conscript army. It has a great deal to do with state rights and state militias and the power of state militias. And one could have a lively debate about how that injunction from the founding document should apply today. But the idea that you're going to defend people being able to make themselves an army and go into a store or to a gun show and get these assault weapons and not even to have minimal checks of it puts you into a position that's absurd. And I was shocked that there were a number of members of Congress enough to stop meaningful legislation that were willing to be associated with that.
What do you make, Christia? I mean, this was a compromise struck by Pat Toomey, you know, Club for Growth conservative, and Manchin, who is nobody's idea of a liberal Democrat. And it's, you know, lots of people this week saying, how can it be that, again, the kind of the minority senators representing such a minority of the country can block something that I'm not saying it would solve all our problems of gun violence, but boy, it seemed like a pretty common sense step to take that couldn't hurt, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a small step to take in a totally laudable and rational goal, which is to have fewer guns around, I thought it was just shocking, actually, and shocking also, and I would say deeply worrying for the Republican Party, because if this is what the Republican Party stands for, it's really hard for me to see its future viability. I thought it was really just amazing, especially, you know, this incredibly watered down, very small thing that it seems that every reasonable person could agree to.
Ramesh, are you a reasonable person? What do you make? What did you make of this? Were you glad to see it go down? Were you supportive of the background check?
I'll let other people judge whether I'm reasonable or not. I think that, the fundamental problem I have with gun regulations is it seems as though the ones that would actually make a real difference or potentially would be unworkable and constitutionally problematic, and the ones that would be workable and not constitutionally problematic just wouldn't make much of a difference. And I think President Obama really got to the political explanation for what happened this week when he said yesterday that the public, the supportive public about these regulations had to be more passionate. And it seems to me the reason that people aren't more passionate is they don't think these things are this great infringement of American freedom. They don't see what's wrong with passing these regulations, but they also don't see how much good they're going to do, and they're just not a high priority item for them, whereas the people who are against them, it's a very high priority for them. And as a result, you know, sort of contrary, I guess, to what Christia said, I don't think there is a single congressman or senator who is going to suffer or lose an election because they voted against this. And I would note that more Democrats in the Senate voted against it than Republicans voted for it.
Well, and maybe, Ramesh, I think you make a really good point, and a point that makes me even more depressed. And I will say, you know, it does make me critical of the sort of broader culture, and that includes the media culture, in which it's possible to be incredibly focused on, incredibly sort of maudlin is not the right word, but, you know, incredibly empathetic about suffering as a national tragedy, the truly tragic event in Newtown, and then just a few months later to have forgotten about it sufficiently that people didn't care enough, you know, that you, Ramesh, can make a strong argument that it's not going to have a political impact. And that sort of, you know, lack that, and you know, that real short attention span, and in some ways maybe even cheap emotion in the American political discourse, I think is really a problem.
We're going to have to leave it there for now. Let us know what you think about the gun bills going down at kciw.com/LRC. We've reached that time once again for our famed end of show, Left, Right, and Center rant, featuring pet peeves from across the political spectrum. Just about 20 seconds each, tightly. Robert Scheer, it's your soapbox.
Well, you did say we would talk about the Reinhart-Rogoff era, and so I think it's a good time to condemn much of what passes for economic science. It's not science. And these folks concocted some theory that was very convenient to people who were deficit fanatics, and they said, you know, wow, when we get in economic trouble, we spend more money. There's a tipping point, it's a disaster, so don't spend more money, instead of recognizing you spend more money because you don't want people to be hurt.
15 seconds. Christia Freeland.
Okay, I'm going to be an eco-wonk as well. This is the weekend of the annual spring meeting of the IMF World Bank. All our finance ministers and central bankers are gathered in Washington. And if they are listening, please remember the job of re-regulating the financial sector is not complete. Finish the job.
Special guest Ramesh Panura, 15 seconds.
People who start fake Twitter accounts for the suspects in the Boston bombings. Really? What could you possibly have been thinking what you were accomplishing for yourself? What psychic benefits? Just stop. And by stop, I mean go to an island and never come back.
A little home news. On Wednesday, April 24th, I'm launching a biweekly podcast called This Is Interesting, to bring you the people and ideas that are shaping our world. Our debut show, The Rise of the Robots, will look at how accelerating technology threatens the future of the middle class. You can play the show and subscribe at kcrw.com/thisisinteresting or access the show on iTunes under the title. That's all the interesting news we have time for today on Left, Right, and Center. Thanks as always to Robert Scheer, special guest Christia Freeland, and Ramesh Panuru. Our show was produced by Laura Dine Million, with a special thanks to Sebastian Gruba at USC's Annenberg School. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in again for more Left, Right, and Center.
So if you like pajamas,
pajamas.
I wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
But we
know we need each other. So we better call the calling of all. Let's call the calling of all. Let's call.
Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes, and share your comments at kcrw.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by KCRW.